Welcome into another edition of the Dane and Victory Podcast, post-game edition. Xavier knocked off Marquette, first round of the Big East tournament. Dan, I don't think many people saw that game coming, that type of game at least.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Xavier defeats Marquette 90-72. Xavier built a 16-point lead in the first half. They led pretty much the whole way, I'm going to say. I think Marquette might have had a very short lead in the early going. But this was a game that really was, as far as I'm concerned, all about Xavier's offensive execution. Their ball rotation. Ed Sumner, from the first minute of the game, the first possession of the game, he whistles a pass in at Jalen Reynolds about 300 miles an hour that Jalen couldn't corral, led to a turnover. But then the second time down, he blows everybody's doors off for a layup. Then I think on the next possession, he had an inbounds pass to Miles for a three a couple possessions later. Has another ridiculous feed a little bit later. I know he went out late in the first half with two fouls. And during that period, Xavier struggled a little bit. That was the only time in the game when it was competitive where they struggled. But Ed's performance was superlative. And I think I know who you want to talk about, so go ahead and talk about him.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly you mean, but I'm assuming Trayvon at this point, since we're not into the post-game portion, which I'm sure we'll discuss. But Trayvon was just an NBA player tonight, flat out. And I talked about this in my pregame, the matchups article, that the last time he played against Henry, it looked very much like he wanted to prove a point to NBA scouts that were watching that said, I can do this too. And last time he struggled defensively against Ellison. Tonight, I thought he really did a great job defending him, for one. And then, two, offensively, he was just absurd. I mean, that first three he hit, I think it was his first three. Yeah, that, but it was the one in the corner early in the first half where he caught the ball nearly out of bounds, saved it from going out of bounds, then shot in the corner from behind the backboard and somehow found an angle to basically swish the shot. That was, I think, the point where we knew he was locked in. And just an outstanding game from him. I mean, there was nothing they could do to guard him. And then when you factor that in with what you mentioned, which was Edmund, who was probably, quite honestly, my biggest takeaway from this game, even though Trayvon played so well, it was just that Edmund handled the spotlight so well was probably my biggest takeaway. When you combine those two playing at that level, they didn't even, like, Miles Davis was kind of on this fringe of having a hot game, and it was like, they don't really need me, so I'm just going to rebound and assist tonight.
Three things on Trayvon. The first thing was when Marquette went to his zone, Trayvon is so good at getting the ball like right around the free throw line, and he does a play action fake effectively, where he fakes a drive and he steps back, and he's absolutely unstoppable from 15, 16, 17 feet. He can do the fadeaway, he can give you a jab step and drop back, or he can do the play action and just sort of throw it up with one hand. He's basically unstoppable. The second thing is Xavier's had this problem that we talked about, quote-unquote problem, of playing to the score. And there was a time in the second half where it went from 28 to 16 points in a short period of time, and there were 8 minutes left, and you kind of thought to yourself, you know, you and I were talking, this is going to be a 10-point game at the under four. Every time it got to that point, Trayvon hit a three, or two of them in a row, if necessary. The third thing was, and this is something with Ellison, we have not seen Trayvon Blewett, other than in these last two Marquette games, show as much emotion and get a little chippy on the floor with the opponent. That's not really – it doesn't seem to be his mindset that much, or it doesn't seem to be his personality, but you could definitely tell that he was taking this game personally. The other thing we can report from the post-game press conference is he said his ankle's fine. He stepped on somebody's foot in the first half, had to be taken into the locker room. They retaped it, and he obviously showed no signs of being slowed down by that.
Yeah, I think that was a great thing for all Xavier fans. People were worried when he went down because it looked like he was grimacing in that pain. But he was back in there quickly. They retaped him. He got back in. He played excellent once he was back in on the court. And, I think you nailed it. The thing that I do find funny about Marquette with Trayvon is, out of all the guys on this team who do like to woof a little bit on the court and talk some junk and shove and get into the extracurriculars.
You've seen one of the great junk talkers of Xavier history over there, Mr. Byron Larkin.
He was pretty good at it, wasn't he? Byron was a decent trash talker. He's down here in the media room right now. But, yeah, Trayvon's never been, out of all the guys on this team who enjoy that, he's never been that guy. But against Ellison and Marquette in general, he's just seemed to kind of be that way. So I definitely thought that was fun to watch. Other than that, the takeaways from this game, I mean, I thought for the most part, the defense was really good when they needed it to be. They went on that huge 15-2 run from about the 7-minute mark to the 1:30 mark, I think, or so of the first half, which kind of put the game away. And quite honestly, that's been what this team does. They play good enough defense for about a five or six minute stretch to go on a big run and put themselves in a comfortable position. And that's what happened in this one. Was there anything else that stood out about the play tonight? I mean, we talked about Kaiser Gates, who really didn't have numbers that stood out at all, but thought he was really solid in the minutes they played well on defense, battled on the boards, was active. Anything else from you that stood out?
I thought all of Xavier's bigs were very effective. Jalen, when he wasn't taking baby hooks, falling away from the goal, was basically unstoppable. James Farr excelled in all with all his moves, whether it be tenacity on the glass, finishing in a back-to-the-basket situation, or stepping out on the floor and facing up. I know he had 3 or 4 jump shots from out on the floor. And then Sean O'Mara a couple times came in and just buried Henry Ellenson or Luke Fisher underneath the glass for easy layups or stickbacks. So you look up and down the roster, you know, Larry played pretty well. Kaiser played well. JP obviously was a huge factor in the first half, hit that monster three at the end of the first half that basically was the nail in the coffin. And pretty impressive full team performance. It's one of those that Xavier's definitely been the most impressive team we've seen today of the six.
Most impressive team of the tournament, obviously, counting yesterday's games, which were essentially play-in games. I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I'm sorry for doing this, but as from a fan's perspective, who are you more excited about at this point going forward? I mean, everyone's in the moment, I understand, but it is an interesting concept. When you talk about these youngsters who are playing a role in big games like this, and Kaiser and Sean, who's excited you more with their play of late?
Out of those two?
Yeah, Kaiser.
Oh, I love them both. But I think I see a higher ceiling for Kaiser because I think he can do more. I think where Kaiser has the opportunity to improve his game, because he's already there defensively, and that's what's the most impressive thing about him. We know he can shoot. We know he can finish some garbage around the basket. What he doesn't have is that post move back to the basket, even being able to step up from like a mid-range situation. Right now, he's basically a threes and junk offensive player, which is fine. That's all they need him to do. But does he have the opportunity to expand that? With Sean, I think he could get better at the things he already does really well. But I don't know that. But I feel like Kaiser's got a little bit higher ceiling. But I'm really glad to have them both around for the next, you know, Sean the next 2 years, Kaiser the next 3 years, because those are the kind of guys that they may not ever be your number one option, but those are the kind of guys you win with, that you have on the roster, that you can put in, that you have no questions about what they're gonna produce, and whether they're gonna be able to neutralize their man, because both of those guys defend and they defend hard.
I think you hit the nail on the head with your evaluation of both guys. With Kaiser, it's more of a, like you said, can he become more than just a 3-and-D guy, as they call it in the NBA? You know, will he be able to put the ball on the floor, make plays? Will he be able to post up and add that to his game? That's interesting. Then with Sean, you're right. He probably doesn't add anything else necessarily to his game. Maybe a little mid-range, but he already kind of has that. It's just something that they definitely don't need out of him in the 4 minutes that he's on the court. But can he do this at the highest levels when he's playing 25, 30 minutes a game? Can he, you know, score 14 instead of just 6 or 8 in the limited stretch that he's in there? Because he was dominant in the low post tonight, and Henry Ellenson, quite honestly, didn't have a chance of defending him. Other than that, I don't think there was a lot to say about this game. It was just kind of a blowout.
That's true. So let's talk about the post game. First of all, from a Xavier perspective, The players, Trayvon, JP, and James, were at the postgame press conference with Coach Mack. They were asked by a national writer about the Coach of the Year snub and whether or not it motivated them. And James was pretty quick. All the diplomatic language, said it didn't really affect them. They didn't really think about it. It hadn't been brought up. You could see Chris almost mouthing the words that were coming out of James's mouth. So I think they had been well-schooled and well-drilled to be prepared for that question. And they said all the right things in the press conference, but yeah, I don't know.
So while you were in the press conference with the Xavier guys, I went into Xavier's open locker room and talked to Edmund, which was good. I just interested to get his take kind of on playing in Madison Square Garden. He told me, you know, I really had some nerves coming into this one, and I was feeling it. And I said, it certainly didn't look that way, but he enjoyed the opportunity. You know, I think he liked the big stage. I think he's the type of kid who feeds off of that opportunity. Tried to get both him and Miles to talk about the coach stuff without Chris being around, and both of them kind of smiled at me like, yeah, I know what you're about to do here, and neither one of them really gave me much. Edmund said, yeah, we kind of know, and Miles said, look, like, he's the national coach of the year, so we know what the deal is, and if we win a national title, then we can really kind of prove everyone wrong, essentially. So then I went into the post-game presser with Wojo.
No players.
No players, just Wojo. And I got cut off by the moderator at one point while I was asking questions. But essentially what I asked him was, with considering the fact that Xavier was not ranked coming into the season, they were not predicted to be a team that could make a run or a Final Four team, is it surprising to him that Chris is not the coach of the year? Why isn't he the coach of the year? And Wojo diplomatically tried to tell me that, well, he's the national coach of the year. So I said, okay, then did you vote for him? And he said, I'm not going to tell you that, obviously, which is his right, and I completely get that, which he didn't vote for him, by the way. We have that list. We're going to bring that out, too. He did not vote for him, but he declined to comment, and so he went on to tell me, what you got to understand is Chris has – he's too deep at every position. He has guys that he's bringing off the bench that are really talented, guys that aren't even playing that are really talented, like O'Mara and London, that are just getting in as almost as walk-ons at the end of the game. And so then I asked him, okay, so are you telling me it's talent? Is that the reason Chris has too much talent? Is that the reason he didn't get Coach of the Year? And he got very upset with me at that point, and it kind of progressed from there.
I mean, the last time somebody went that hard at Wojo, he flopped and got a charging call. And also, let's be perfectly clear. What you were asking, when you went Frost Nixon on Wojo at that press conference, there were less questions than accusations of malfeasance, thinly veiled accusations of malfeasance. But yeah, I mean, he definitely got very defensive about it, and it was very, he seemed very pleased that your brutal line of cross-examination was over. I mean, you basically you Johnny Cochran him, and it was something to behold. There's definitely a feeling in the room at that point that things had taken a turn.
There were more than a few people who turned around and stared at me at that point and were done with paying attention to whatever their dumb question was going to be next that had to do with talking about something. And then the moderator jumped in and told me, it reminded me that the Big East Coach of the Year is an accumulation of the coach's vote and that Wojo did not have to answer to that.
So, if we don't record a podcast tomorrow, it's because our credentials have been yanked.
Exactly. And so, before we get to that, I'll just go ahead and let you know that Wojo voted for Willard. I have no problem telling you that. You guys, I know I said on the board that I might not be able to get the list. I lied. I got it. We did some major truthering today. Talked to sources. And we have the list. So, I think slowly, one by one, as these teams drop out of the tournament, we'll just go ahead and remind you guys. So who else has lost so far?
Georgetown's
out. JT3 voted for Jay Wright.
DePaul.
DePaul voted for Willard. I'm sorry. That is incorrect. DePaul voted for Jay Wright.
I've seen Marquette. We already talked about
that. Marquette voted for Willard.
Chris Holtman.
Holtman voted for Willard. I thought – now – we knew he wasn't going to vote for Chris Mack.
Right.
I think JP McKira very clearly cost him that vote, if there was even a possibility of it still happening before that game at Hinkle. But, yeah, so there it is. There's where we're at so far. And as we continue, Xavier continues to knock teams off. I'll continue to go truther in press conferences until they tell me I'm not allowed back inside of them. And we'll continue to air out these grievances on the podcast.
All right. I think that's probably good enough for this evening. We'll be back. We're right now, we're recording this immediately after the Xavier game, by the way. Seton Hall and Creighton currently in the first half. In the fourth quarterfinal here at MSG, which is probably not going to end until about 2 o'clock in the morning, thanks to all the booth reviews during the second half of the Xavier game. But we'll be back probably tomorrow afternoon with a preview of the semifinal game. Probably, we'll preview both semifinals, obviously. Villanova and Providence, which is a mouth-watering encounter. That's a heck of a matchup. And then Xavier against the winner of the Seton Hall Creighton game, and the winner of that will play on Saturday night. Although I'm told that it's not at 9:30 on Saturday, the final is at 5:30 on Saturday evening. So that's kind of a shock to me, but
that is excellent news for our entertainment hour here in New York City. So with that, I am very excited to start this tonight's entertainment hour, and we will let you guys go. You've been listening to another edition of the Dane to Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick from Madison Square Garden. Thanks for listening, everyone.